Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the Left of Greg podcast. I am Brian Marin, the host and creator of the show. As always, I will be joined by human behavior expert Mr. Greg Williams, who the show is affectionately named after. Here on the Left of Greg show, our goal is to increase your advanced critical thinking ability through a better understanding of what we call human behavior, pattern recognition, and analysis. If you'd like to find out more about what that is, you can check out our website at arcadiacognorati.com or by following us on Facebook at HBPRA. Please help support the show by checking out our Patreon site, where for just a few dollars you can have access to all kinds of episode extras, videos, and short tutorials that are updated weekly. Just click the link in the episode details that says support the show and we'll take you directly to that site. If you have any questions or would like us to cover a specific topic, please reach out to us at leftofgreg@gmail.com. On today's episode, Greg and I are talking about another Gregism called the happy head. The happy head affects all humans, and it especially affects us during exciting events like the robbery and shooting spree that we bring up during the episode, or even while Greg is attempting new parkour moves. During these events, we often outrun our headlights because we don't realize that we've lost our critical thinking abilities. We also discuss how humans first learn, then test, then push their boundaries. Please don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find the links in the episode details. And if you enjoy the podcast, please tell your friends about it. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show. Something about gaming on there. So if there's another edition, like if you're playing a video game and want to live stream it to Facebook and watch people watch you play video games.
Arcadia is going to do that next, and I've got my virtual Jenga that we're going to play.
Virtual Jenga. On that note, Greg, good morning. Let's go ahead and get started with today's recording. And once again, folks, if you are just listening, you can always follow me on Facebook because we hop on here and live stream it a whole bunch sometimes too. So today's topic is we're going to be talking about the happy head, as we refer to it. Now, why don't you real quick, Greg, before we jump into that, give us a real quick definition of what we mean by the happy head.
It's simple. So I'll street it down. Listen, the happy head is when you're driving too fast that you outrun your headlights and your common sense and your impulse control doesn't jump in and stop you. So I'll give you a real quick example. Back at East Detroit High School, there was we were the mini Jets playing football. You know, the little kids up and coming.
Yeah.
And the family that lives two doors down from me was Joni and Janie and Danny and Donald, and he worked for the Anheuser-Busch distributing the coolest family. And so their little brother Danny Coolest was running around in the bleachers, and the mom and dad were tired of him and said, go down behind the bleachers. So he went down behind the bleachers and everybody was playing grab ass, and he ran and he clotheslined himself right at this height with one of the metal bars that comes across and knocked him out. He had to go get stitches. You could see the scar well into his high school years. The idea was that he was galumphing around like an idiot and didn't notice the severity of the situation unfold in front of him. And we all do that. Sometimes we do that at little kids riding a bike. Sometimes we do that as adults driving in a car. So the happy head is whenever you allow your impulse control or self-control to take a back seat and you do something that you know or should have known was going to get you in a trick bag.
Okay, yeah, and that you brought in a couple different examples because we see it with people, you know, not thinking. We always do that. How did that happen? Or that escalated quickly? Or man, one thing led to another. That's kind of what we mean by the happy head. So it could be like a positive, it could be a negative, it could be you're like that. You're having so much fun and you're having some drinks. You're not even realizing all of a sudden you fall or something stupid happens, right? You got the happy head. You weren't thinking. Looking back, you go, wow, that's so obvious. I should have seen it.
Exactly.
And the happy head comes from electrochemical neurotransmitter. Right. So I'm so hooked on that dopamine that I'm feeling. I'm so up and excited about whatever's going on. Man, that critical thinking never came in and I never stopped and said, hey, wait a minute. Right. And you talk about impulse control and obviously that changes over time with your age and everything. But this affects everyone. Right. So it affects criminals on the street, you know, the cops chasing the criminals. You've got whatever's going on in your life. It could be just a really fun event. You're having fun with your your friends on the weekend, and then all of a sudden turns into, hey, let's do this, or hey, no, let's just, hey, we're just heading down the road. We can pile in the bed of the pickup truck. And then, now we're doing what we did in high school with at a buddy, and he had an El Camino, and we'd ride in the back, and we did what we called Mino grinds, where he would come up to there was an intersection, and on the street, there was a concrete divider that went up like 2 feet high, almost like on a highway. But here's the thing, it started out at street level and then raised up. So he would put one side of the El Camino up on the concrete barrier, right? And we'd be riding in the back and then slam back down, just like you're doing a grind on your skateboard. But this was with a vehicle. So I guess that would be
a 6,000-pound piece of metal. No, but Brian, you brought two incredibly great points together right with that story. And I wrote down the one word, euphoria. Remember, when mm-hmm. euphoria hits us, euphoria is fed by the electrochemical neurotransmitters you talked about. And all of a sudden we get epinephrine and adrenaline and all these other things that make us feel wonderful. Woo-hoo! So you could be a criminal and you escape that grab of that cop during a foot chase. And all of a sudden you feel the redoubled efforts that, man, I'm superhuman. Or you can feel like that in the back of that pickup truck. You never think about that. If I break an axle or pop a tie rod,
right,
death sled into the, you know, the ravine or something. So those are the exact type of situations we want to showcase today.
Yeah.
To first show people how easy it is that to happen. And second, maybe a strategy, a way ahead out of falling for it.
So I'll jump in with this example out of Arizona recently. This was just like last month or actually back in September, but it's a great example of a criminal, right, getting the happy head and continuing on with their spree, right? So this guy basically went on this over the course of 4 days, a crime spree in the Mesa Chandler area of Arizona. I think he was charged with 19 felony charges, but basically started with, you know, he started shooting at two victims outside of a sports grill, right? Then went down and robbed someone at gunpoint, took their vehicle. So we had a carjacking at this point, continued on and robbed a barbecue joint. And accosted some of the people there, continued on from there. Not long after that, as police officers found a vehicle that he had stolen because it had completely run out of gas. So they found it unoccupied, out of gas, full of barbecue wrappers from the barbecue place. So, which means he ate in the vehicle too. He continued up into another area to stole another pickup truck. And then he had a backpack. He tried to put that in the bed of the pickup truck, not realizing there was a hole in the bed of the pickup truck where his backpack fell through. And inside that backpack, there was a whole bunch of incriminating evidence that tied him to the previous crimes. But then this continued because then they found that pickup truck abandoned. They then went, I think he, after he abandoned that vehicle, he then robbed someone else at gunpoint. It was actually a home robbery, I think, at that point, or he took him into the guy into his home and robbed him. Then he went to grocery store, robbed another person. He went to another neighborhood where he stole a vehicle at gunpoint. So basically, he's just going from one auto theft, eating, robbing, run out of gas, rob, grab some food, all this stuff. He just continues this kind of crime spree. And then, you know, it was, I think, you know, stole some credit cards, bought some more stuff, continued, ended up at a hotel, barricaded himself in the room. SWAT team had to come, and he eventually surrendered, I think, peacefully at that motel. So basically he went from, you know, there's a ton of details you get into about the case, but that, you know, he walked up, I'm going to shoot some people. Hey, then I got to get out of here. So, hey, there's a vehicle. I'll just go take it from that guy. Okay. Hey, now I'm hungry. Well, shit, I can rob this place too. I don't have to pay. And then continued on from there. I mean, this is I would call the definition of what we would call at bang thinking, right? Yes. It's just everything in his life is right here in front of it. And that's the only thing you can think. There was a complete and total lack of any type of critical thinking, let alone advanced critical thinking.
Brian, we talk about if you're writing a manifesto or know of someone who is or have ever, danger warning, Will Robinson, start calling, put 9-1 and hold your finger over the 1. Well, if you find that your life is remarkably like the script of Steven Seagal's Out for Justice. You know, who shot Bobby Lupo?
And that horrible accent.
Okay.
I still remember that line from that movie.
It's called Criminal Mischief. We have this long criminal episode that ebbs and flows and then just never ends, seemingly never ends. And like the first vehicle that our miscreant drove until it was out of gas and then finally abandons to steal another one. He's out of gas in the hotel and goes, the jig's up. You get what I'm trying to say? Come and get me, copper. Right. Instead of going out like white heat, top of the world, Ma. Why didn't he go out that way? Well, there's a lot going in there. But you got to remember that just like that gas tank, each one of those incidents gives him a little more bravado and a little more and a little more. Now he's in a crappy hotel room somewhere, sitting with barbecue sauce, dried on his shirt.
On his fingers.
He's got one bullet left. You get what I'm trying to say? And he goes, well, I've had a ball. I'm certainly not going to shoot myself. You pegged it when you said, not only do we have a lack of impulse control, but there is no forward thinking. There are no spirals. There is no critical thinking. So you can't have advanced critical thinking without critical thinking. And what separates the two? Brian, critical thinking gets us through life normally, saying alligator in doorway one, lion in doorway two, doorway three looks pretty breezy, so I'm going to take doorway three. Advanced critical thinking is, how the hell did a crocodile and a lion get in my house? You get what I'm trying to say? I better button up those windows. But the idea is that one thinking human can predict when that's going to happen or see it in progress and stop it at bang, but the person that's involved in it generally cannot. So if it's euphoria born out of fun, we got to be able to rein it in, drinking, partying, hey, a wedding. Do you get what I'm saying? Or if it's a criminal episode like this, we got to nip it in the bud because they leave charred corpses in their wake. People don't get it. And guess what, Brian? The gift of time and distance makes us think about those and it slows it down. And that's what the hotel gave them. The hotel and the SWAT team outside gave this person the time to think and go, okay, this is going to end poorly. I'll likely die here. And then he did the cost benefit analysis and said, no.
And that's a good point is, everything else is happening kind of in real time as he goes along. Yep. Right. And then he gets the hotel. Like you said, he's got a belly full of food. SWAT team shows up. Now one, he can't go anywhere. So now he actually has to turn his brain on for a second and go, damn, what am I going to do now?
That escalated.
That escalated quickly. Hey, where'd you get a grenade from? No. That's an example of how a criminal does it, right? It's very just, this worked. It's a Family Guy. Ooh, a piece of candy. Ooh, a piece of candy.
Exactly.
Ooh, a piece of candy. And he's going to keep doing that until whatever the situation changes. He's just going to continue down that path until something happens with the situation, whether that's the environment or something that causes him to then, maybe it could have been as simple as, damn, I'm tired. I want to go get some sleep. There's a motel. I'm going to check in. I mean, that's literally that's as much thinking as he probably ever did during these situations.
Yeah. And the more time, the better. Time plays against the criminal and also wisens up the euphoric. So let's talk about just a couple of brief ones, Brian, that I saw in my career as a copper. One, I remember a videotape of a bank robbery that was in St. Clair Shores, where when the bank robbery suspect left the building, where the cops, by the way, were sneaking up on the building, and it was the glass where you can only see the one-way glass because of the reflections, and the cops were clearly visible from the inside of the bank sneaking up. So the guy bails, and when he gets outside, he's so happy he bails. He ripped his mask off and slammed it like he was in the NFL and in the Super Bowl and just made a touchdown. And it was great because they were able to tie that guy back to the crime. Bank robbers using their own deposit slip as the holdup note. We thought about everything else, but we didn't think about putting our name and address on the slip. And then finally, a criminal one that I saw, there was a stabbing that was so horrific that the person used the French knife from the kitchen, and they stabbed repeatedly. And usually when you get that high amount of stab wounds, you know that it's somebody that's related. You know what I'm saying? They cover the face, do one of those things. And the person stabbed so much, Brian, that they nicked themselves countless times on the blade, but the adrenaline didn't let them feel the pain. So they put their DNA at the crime scene and, then doing the interview the next day with their hand wrapped, looking like a catcher's mitt, telling the detective, no, I was at home last night. You know, those type of things happen often because when we're in the moment, Brian, we don't think ourselves out of the moment. We don't prioritize that information coming in. And that's the key.
No, and I think that this guy in from Arizona example is perfect of how he went from one place to another, and then you get those high adrenaline, you know, high dopamine kicks, you know, and now I'm on it. There's no critical thinking going on whatsoever, and then that, as we know, that's your body starts to process that. It start those levels of those chemicals start to go down, and then now you get hungry, now you get tired, and then he literally followed that along, and he always fell back on what he knew. So it's this constant like ebb and flow, like you said, but it's an extreme. It's extremely, hey, I'm amped up, I'm robbing the place, I'm stealing a car, I'm shooting it up, and then all the way down, damn, I gotta eat, I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm gonna go to a motel, and then it can go right back up. I mean, this is, it's exactly. Like literally, I mean, you talk about impulse control, it's literally like dealing with a child, like you're dealing with a three-year-old child who's just screaming, I'm super pissed, and then 2 seconds later is down laughing about something. You're like, how do you have that emotional range? Well, that's exactly what we're talking about here.
AARP, of which I'm a member. Thank you for reminding me. Happy Veterans Day, by the way, and USMC birthday. AARP had a great article that I read in its entirety when I was on the shitter the other day, and it was talking about your grandchildren and your children and how they approach to driving.
Like mine specifically? I don't think I have grandchildren yet.
Well, DNA says otherwise, Brian. But the idea is that you have a kid that now wants to drive the car on their own, and you keep telling them, no, I'll go with you, this and that. Yep. So the kid goes out on their own. Well, remember the euphoria that goes along with that. So now they've got the happy head. So they decide they're going to do everything right, 10 and 2, making sure, checking their mirrors. And then all of a sudden they see their buddy standing on a street corner. So that buddy leads them to another group of friends, and now there's 9 of them in a car, and all of a sudden they decide that they're going to turn up the, and they got the bass kicking, and they're jamming. Do you know that with each one of those critical decisions, Brian, the risk grows immensely. When right. they're alone, less chance of an accident. When they're with one person, it triples. When they're with two or more people in there of their age group, it quadruples. And right. then it starts growing remarkably when the music is louder than normal. So if you knew that, and you could show your kid how that works, and you either did a cave painting or a PowerPoint to illustrate it, you would hope that they would go, wow, and take that in earnest and say, I can control my own destiny. Now we know that kids have to learn the hard way sometime, but scar tissue doesn't have to be, graveside. It doesn't have to be in a coffin.
Right. And the kid examples are great because it's easy to go, oh yeah, I see how that happens, or look back in your own life. But this, it's not that it just, we don't ever outgrow this. And a perfect example is like the Darwin Awards, right? I mean,
perfect.
So like you have like, how does it get to the point where someone's actually going to try and put a rocket in a car and launch it? I don't even know if that one was true, but like put a rocket in a car and launch themselves or something. But you get these insane, you know, ways that people die, end up killing themselves. And, you know, we do have the whole, they get a Darwin Award for it. You know, you kind of put, you took yourself out of the gene pool, thankfully, because you're such an idiot. But these are adults, some very smart and some very educated and who should know better, right? So how does this tell me, bridge the gap for me, where the guy who's going around shooting and killing and stealing cars and robbing and whatever, how is that the same thing as the guy who puts a rocket inside of a vehicle and tries to launch himself?
So let me give you two, and let me talk about what you just said. Some of the people that get the Darwin Awards are geniuses and doctors and brilliant in their own right. And in the moment, they didn't think clearly. And that lack of you know, cost-benefit analysis cost them their lives. So you said bridge the gap. So I'll give you one. I have some favorites. So back in 2002, and you know, Brian, I do parkour every day as part of my stringent marathon workout.
Go ahead, send me those videos, please.
So those chuckleheads that were overseas outside of a Paris district, and I don't remember where parkour started. Parkour was actually the guy that fell off the thing, and they said, hey, we'll name it after him, right? So they're going by a car park, and there's a gap with a 40-foot drop between the two car parks. And so the guy's walking on the ledge and they're following him. You know how the, hey, watch me, and then I egg you on to do it. And they drop over and make it to the next car park. And like little ducklings following a duck, they all make it and they go to the pub. So they're at the pub and they, you know, videotaped it and they took their selfies and everything else. And they had a couple of drinks. So on the way back, after a couple of drinks on board, they go, hey, let's do that again.
Yeah.
And the first guy dies, and they go, oh shit, we never saw that coming. Look, you outrun your headlights. So I'll give you another one. There's a guy in Canada, and his name eludes me, but I love the video. He's a lawyer. Everybody knows the lawyer. And what he would do in the conference room of the law firm, every day that he had people in there, he'd do it 2-3 times a day. He'd run as fast as he can to the window and jump up and hit the window and say, yeah, these are indestructible windows. Welcome to the party. And yeah. It was like a parlor trick. The guy did it over and over and over. And on this day, he had done it on two previous meetings. And on the third meeting, he hit the window and the window came out and he fell to his death 100 floors or whatever. What happens, Brian, is you start ramping yourself up and you have this feeling of invincibility. I'll give you a perfect example. Our great friend Andy Brown wrote Warnings Unheeded. We have a B-52 pilot, Bud Holland, Colonel Bud Holland, that pushes that B-52 to its limits over and over and over. Yeah. And what happens is each time that he does it, he gets this sense that I'm invincible. I know the limits. I know the very the hand of God itself is helping guide me. And guess what? That euphoria is short-lived. It's your brain trying to tell you to repeat that behavior. But the problem is we repeat it and we repeat it and we push those boundaries until, guess what? We exceed our own human limitations. So you have an uneducated or less than well-educated guy that's cracking and drinking and smoking and stealing cars. And finally, he goes on the wild and does the Bobby Lupo out for justice, right? Or you have these folks that think that they're completely in control of the situation, like Bud Holland, a genius at the top of his game, that exceeds something that we all call physics. You get what I'm trying to say? There's this thing called gravity, Brian. Yeah. It'll be around for a while.
Well, it has been. So. Yeah,
but we should have known better.
No. And I always like to point all this stuff out, and even any of the examples we bring up and a lot of the podcasts and different issues we discuss, like it affects all humans. So those are two great examples from seemingly opposite ends of the spectrum, right? You had the Colonel Bud Holland, highly trained pilot, been doing something, an expert in his field, how many thousands of hours was he in that aircraft? And he continued to push until he outran his headlights. And this is the same thing as the opposite end of the spectrum. This guy in Arizona that we first started talking about going around, he probably has, you know, I mean, you're talking about no level of education or training involved in anything, no critical thinking whatsoever. And so you have those two individuals seemingly very opposite ends of the spectrum of thought or intellect or education or training or whatever you want to put that on, right? And yet they fall victim to these same exact electrochemical neurotransmitters to be specific, but the same trap, like that they fall into the same category for us of happy head because it affects all of us. And you know, you see that because we talk a lot about behavior and criminals and specifically nefarious, I guess, behavior out of all these folks. We see it and always take it from that perspective, but we forget, you know, from our own. And you keep bringing it back to children because it's a perfect example of what we always talk about in class, right? First, I learn my boundaries, then I test my boundaries, and then I push my boundaries. So that's what all of these are. So I think even like your parkour guy, your Bud Holland, right? Those are they're testing their boundaries now, right? They're starting to get to that level of, I'm going to push it. I'm going to keep pushing. So that's the difference of a guy who hits that limit and goes, okay, damn. Yep. There's the line right there. There it is. I know how far I can go versus someone hits that line and goes, okay, I hit that line. Where's the next one? And that's the different in behavior in a lot of it, right? I mean, does that kind of make sense?
You're right on. And listen, self-control, impulse control, both very, very related, but distinct things. Brian, if I don't have a parent or a mentor or a teacher or a coach, I'm more likely to fall for the happy head. Do you get what I'm trying to say? Because if I have that one person on the ledge next to me going, dude, it's a long way down to the pool, and I don't think you're going to make it, you'll give yourself the gift of time and distance and rethink it. Now, you may still jump, Brian, but the likelihood that you're going to engage in this ongoing risky behavior, let's call it, is less likely. And you know, you get an educated guy. You remember back in the 80s, I think it was, I'm going through my Rolodex, remember Dan Rather on the news all the time with Dan Rather. Nobody watches those talking heads anymore. But Dan Rather was coming out of doing the news, and he runs into two guys that walk up to him and say, "Hey, Kenneth, what's the frequency?"
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
They're pushing him around. And Dan Rather, this brilliant guy, thinks it's some kind of a gag. And then they beat him almost to death, and he's in intensive care. And 10 years later, REM, comes out. What's the frequency, Kenneth?
All right. Yeah.
Okay. We all joke about that, but that was Dan Rather, a genius, his inability to see right in front of him that the situation spun out of control and that these two meth heads were going to beat him and rob him. That's what happened in Arizona, Brian. People didn't see that this cataclysmic event, that this snowball coming downhill, was gaining momentum, right? And that it was going to crash somewhere. That's the type of thing we're talking about. And Brian, we see that in serial killers too.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah.
So my favorite is Ridgway. I hate to say it favorite. I'm not taking any glory in this, but Ridgway dumped the body, and the coppers see the body, and they're going, "Hey, getting closer to Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer." And they see the body that was dumped down there, and they go down to check out that body. And here is the decomposing body of the three previous hookers that he had murdered. He was meticulous in his planning and his dumping and how he would return to scenes. Yet guess what? He got so ramped up near the end, Brian, that he forgot that. Gacy, putting kids in his basement, he made sure he separated, he dug, he put quick lime on the bodies. He did all these other things. But guess what? Near the end, he started ramping up, Brian, and he forgot it, and it turned into a garden down there, and he was stacking kids like cordwood. We don't think, and guess what? They're just they're different. Many people turn rage, and action becomes anger becomes action, and they do it with a very short fuse. This is not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is that one incident drives the next, and then drives the next, and before I know it, I'm out of control.
Well, right, and with all of these, because that's the, how do I predict likely outcomes in all these situations is what we always teach and what we're going for, right? And so, that it's hard to understand where someone's at. You don't know what's going on in someone's life, or when you walk in, you maybe just walked into a by chance, robbery, or maybe this is robbery number three on that spree. You don't know where you fall in that, and that's no different than you don't know where someone's at when they're coming out, they're going to do their parkour trick or whatever, right? Have they attempted this three times and nailed it successfully? Have they not? What are they doing? So I think it's important to kind of take it back to those boundaries and understanding on how we all do this, because then that will, in a sense, help me identify that, right? So
precisely,
all of these guys, I don't care, that happens. We see that in private companies that, hey, this was a really good product or investment we did. Hey, let's do that again. Oh, let's do that again. You know what? Maybe we can do a little bit more. And they start going down this path. They're going like, now you're off of what your actual mission is. And you're going down this, you have mission creep, and you start going and going and going. And eventually it's going to catch up with you because you didn't account for something. Because that's exactly how serial killers get caught, right? You brought
exactly
up Gacy,
right,
and Dahmer and all these guys that it's always they overlooked something that they typically didn't do because they fell into that, man, I got really excited, I got off, or I felt this rush of dopamine and adrenaline and oxytocin sometimes, and all these different very, very, very powerful chemicals that they're feeling, that's when I leave that piece of evidence laying out. That's when I forget to close the door or lock the door or shut my garage door, and now I get robbed that night, or turn my car lights off because I'm so happy about something else going on. My battery is dead the next day. It's that same behavior, or that behavior is the same no matter what the situation is, and we can fall victim to it. So the serial killer one is always an interesting one, because obviously from an HBP RNA and patterns and pattern analysis and how you can determine what they're likely going to do, that's huge, because they're all so predictable, right? But it falls into that, first I learn my boundaries, then I test my boundaries, then I push my boundaries. And how far I'm willing to test or push my boundaries, that gets into, what I know as a person. So like our guy at the beginning in Arizona, right? He probably never left the neighborhoods and the cities that he's been operating in and living in his whole life, or at least recently for a long time, right? He didn't know anything outside of that area. So he stayed within his area versus, you know, same thing with John Wayne Gacy, right? He stayed within a geographical location.
Yes.
This is where he knew and felt comfortable. And then I compare that to like Ted Bundy, who started all the way in the Pacific Northwest, made his way all the way across country down to Florida because he felt comfortable. So when he starts pushing his boundaries and his operating environment and his level of organization allows him to kind of open up the aperture a little bit in terms of what he's going to do, but he still goes back to exactly what he knows and the method and the mode, you know, of how he actually does that. He's still going to fall back on. Does that kind of make sense?
You nailed it. And if you're a HR person or a parent or a copper that's listening out there, listen closely. Okay. The first example Brian gave us about the criminal episode, that individual was out of control where their chemicals kept giving their brain the happy head and they went until they skidded to a stop somewhere. When we're talking about serial killers, we're talking about a psychopathy where the cognitive control mechanisms are working perfectly. They're not enraged, out of control people.
Right.
They're working perfectly, except they were wired with a very disturbed goal. So separate the two. It's a distinct separation. And Brian, I think psychologically, specifically in abhorrent psychology, an argument could be made that many of those serial killers made those little mistakes along the way because they had an urge to be found out. I can't fully be appreciated unless you know it was me that did it.
Yeah.
And so Dennis Rader, BTK, he lost the bubble. They weren't looking for him anymore. 10, 12 years of killing had gone by and he was so good, they were no closer to finding him. So what did he do, Brian? He started writing messages. He started saying, hey, I'm over here.
And that's, you know, why that gets into a whole, a whole other area we could do an entire podcast on.
Yeah.
And that's, that's again, though, I think that's still a version of what you're kind of classifying or calling the happy head, right?
Yes.
I'm getting it, like each one of those, I still need that.
I'm playing
that
fast
rush
and loose.
Yeah.
Yes.
And because I need that. Either reaction out of people or whatever the situation, because I get something out of that. I get that chemical release in my body that says, yeah, this is what I want. And then it continues for there. So if I lack that impulse control or lack control, you know, then it's going to be harder for me to come back. I'm going to continue to push those boundaries. And
you're exactly right. So listen, most people control their actions and relatively few people have their interactions end in violence of any kind, even raised voices. That's the one thing. And so even though they're confronted with disappointment or frustration or anger on a daily basis, they cope with it. So that's one set of humans. Then we've got the other set of humans, the serial killer ilk, right, that are have a psychopathy that they're driven by the happy head, that I get aroused by this very specific sort of thing. And so I'm going to search that out. And that also becomes gambling, sexual addiction,
right,
drugs, and all that other stuff are a narrow bandwidth, I think, with those. And then the final one being the people that all of a sudden go in and they rob that car and you know, do it by gunpoint, and they get that rush. And then all of a sudden they're standing in the line at McDonald's and they're still living that rush. And they go, I ain't paying for this. And then the next thing is the cop pulling behind him, and now I'm going to flee.
I'm not going to jail.
Yeah,
yep. Yeah.
But if we understand what we're dealing with, we can then predict what's likely going to happen.
So that's the kind of the general hard question here, right? Is to be addressed, is that I get it, but so what? Meaning, how do I do that in real time, or maybe not just even just real time, or how do I determine that in the situation to go, oh, this person is pushing their boundaries, they're going to continue to push their boundaries. Or, hey, this person is doing what normal humans kind of do. They're testing things and they're annoying and they're an asshole, but they're not really, they're just being loud at the bar. They're not really going to actually push, because that comes into it with all these people. And even in real time, like, all right, I'm standing in 7-Eleven, I'm grabbing a six pack of beer on the way home, and someone comes in to rob the place. How do I determine this guy's trying to get some cash and get the hell out of there as quickly as possible? Or no, this guy, he wants blood. He's out. This ain't just about a robber. You see how that is? Because,
but you just said it, you just gave a perfect example for the people listening, and you forget sometime that when you function at such a high level as you are, that other
that's
people
what aren't, that's aren't, what the doctors call me, a high functioning alcoholic.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you mean?
And I would say that the function isn't that high, Brian. lofty, but trust me, it's aspirational. Listen, when you're talking about something as simple as a geographic profile, all of the criminals that were committed in Mesa, Arizona were linked to things this person knew. And ooh, a piece of candy. Well, the barbecue is really good stuff, and I didn't pay for the car, so I'm not paying for the barbecue, and I'm going to continue to do that and until I get caught. Okay, that's wilding. We get that. Second part of that is we have to understand that it's difficult to interpret these without context. So in the serial killer realm, the serial killer is going to pursue a bandwidth of likely victims. There's very few serial killers that fight outside of, like, they're, you know, it's the race, and then it's this, and then it's like Dahmer. If you looked at early Dahmer, Dahmer was preying on the gay community. So it was likely that Dahmer was coming from the gay community, you see, but they didn't connect that quick enough. So what I'm telling you, pardon me, both of us, thank you for the traveling idea.
This I'm just glad it's not COVID. I'm just glad it's not COVID.
We got non-COVID related symptoms here.
Yeah.
But the idea, Brian, is that the violence in serial killers is channeled in a very specific direction with a very specific target. You talked about a guy walking in. A guy walks in to rob the liquor store and closes and locks the door behind him and starts pulling down the blinds. Do you get what I'm trying to say? That person might be there a while. If a person kills, they're going to tend to kill again. The longer it is between the time that the person kills and not killing means that you're likely to end your killing spree. You see what I'm saying? So a person that goes in, shoots up the place, accidentally shoots the counter person, then goes, holy crap, shoots a cop on the way out of it. The longer it goes from that last shooting, the better chance you have of catching that person. They're either going to commit a suicide, rack up, barricade or something, but they're likely not going to shoot it out with you. Why? Because they're different than the person that goes in and says, I have a grudge, you pissed me off, and decides to walk into the DMV with a gun and target those people that made it hard for him to get a plate for his trailer. So the targeted nature, the geographic nature, that's where we came up with the domains. The idea is that when people go for more than those domains than just one, that's likely going to be the answer. Whereas a serial killer would tend to operate within that one domain, but do it very specifically.
Yeah, no, and that's a good way just to even look at something in progress like that. I mean, you could tell, like, I don't know why I thought of the Las Vegas shooting, Paddock, Stephen Paddock, right? Yeah. I mean, that he at no point, like, you can take a look during that attack and say, all right, we're coming under very accurate sniper fire. It's coming from an elevated position in this hotel room. Everything is even in real time, you can go, this guy isn't just going to stop and throw his hands up. This guy isn't going to then go, nope, he's not there to get a message out. He's not there to do anything beyond right there in the moment killing people. And he's not going to stop until someone kills him, right? And just by the method of attack versus you brought up what you see a lot is like the rage attacks or you know, we cut the my cup half runneth over, right? And it. I'm now, that's the what's his name, Michael Douglas falling down movie where I've just had enough and now I'm going to take it out all the wrongs in the world. But there's different type of, or that's more of like an injustice collector kind of thing.
Precisely. Injustice collector is like a grenade exploding all directions. And that's not what we saw with Paddock.
No. And that's what I'm saying is that even in real time is this person doing this to every single person they encounter? Like the guy in Arizona down at the beginning, what did he do? It was just 100% at bang thinking, okay, I shot these people. All right, now I need to get out of here. So I need a car. Okay, got a car. All right, shit, it ran out of gas. Okay, now I need another one. Or, you know what, damn, I'm hungry. Like, it's very, very, very primal. It's not, there's no organization. There's no sophistication to it, right? So he's going to continue that behavior versus if I took the time to get a certain hotel room, overlooking a certain area, like, and then I have this.
He packed his luggage full of ammo. He took time to buy luggage to fit his guns. Think of that.
Right. He had to put a lot of planning into it. And then you can tell right away if there's some level of planning involved in what I'm observing right now, that's an organization level that I need to be concerned about because that means they have a plan and I might not have one. Right.
Yep.
So it's the same thing as, you know, the example of the guy walking into the 7-Eleven when you're in there and, you know, did they walk up right to the cash register and they don't even see that you're in there because they're so mission focused on what's going on that they literally cannot see you standing right there. That's very different than, like you said, walk in, lock the door, start putting stuff down and start ordering people around, right? Two completely same situation, two completely different likely outcomes, right?
Well, remarkably, Mesa, Arizona, just a couple of days ago, four people in a stolen ride driving down a street in broad daylight, see a guy walking with a backpack. Backseat passenger gets out, goes over, starts arguing with the people. Great ATM footage. You can look it up online. And the guy says, no, you're not having my backpack. Finally, the guy walks away, turns around, starts shooting at the guy, then walks back over to him. Okay, when you double back like that after firing that first shot, once that first shot is fired, the whole dynamic of that situation changed. And that person on the ground, poor victim, because the guy ended up shooting him and taking his backpack anyway, and then went on to more criminal episodes. Listen, don't turn this robbery into a homicide. There's a whole bunch of people out there that do at-bang training. And if I had my own weapon, and if I had this, and if I had that. Listen, defense is 3-1 odds. You know what I'm saying? 5-1 in urban. I get all the numbers. But it's different when somebody stops a car in broad daylight. There's four meth heads in a car, and a big guy comes over to you and says, give up the backpack. That's a backpack that's going on the insurance report, Brian.
Yeah.
You get what I'm trying to say? Would you like me to wipe your windows down? Can I carry you and the backpack back to your car?
Yeah.
And people right now are going to flip out, and they're going to argue about that. If I come into your store and I sense that there's going to be resistance, and guess what? I'm already amped up on all these electrochemical neurotransmitters, and I crank off a round, second round's going to be easier. Then the third round, and now I'm waving in the face. And, you know, so what we don't, well, let me put it in your context of being a Marine, and happy Marine Corps birthday. You're on patrol, and a dude up in front of the patrol snags a root with his toe, trips and NDs, and fires off a three-round burst. What are the four Marines behind him?
Yelling contact, whatever.
Shooting. They're shooting. And I've seen that with coppers before. We were going up on a scene, and one of the coppers tripped and fired off a gauge. Thank God didn't blow his own head off. And as soon as he fired, all the cops pop, 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 pop. And there's a crescendo of violence, and all of a sudden it ended up, and I hear, my bad. Those things happen. If we're already predisposed to do that, then all at-bang training must have a left-of-bang component, because if it doesn't, Brian, you're not going to anticipate those boundaries. You're not going to see when those tea leaves start coming together and going, this is a protracted criminal episode, and this guy's not going to stop until he kills everybody or himself.
No, and that's another good example of how, you know, we fall into the getting the happy head, right? Is, we were so amped up going into that as soon as someone cracked a round off, all of a sudden everyone thinks, oh my gosh, this is it. We're in it. That's another, remember, just for everyone listening, it's a descriptive device, the happy head, right? We're just describing a general
psychological profile, you know?
Yeah, it is. And we use that because it's one, it's easy to remember, and it's easy to fall into, and it's easy to see all the time, right? Especially when you have those little spree criminals like that didn't plan the attack, they become the happy head. And that could be out of excitement. It could be out of fear. It could be a number of things, but meaning you put it great when you said, once I fire one round, well, now it's a lot easier for me to fire two or three or four. Once I kill one person, well, that's it. Once I rob one vehicle, and that goes into the, you know, I learn my boundaries, I test my boundaries, I push my boundaries. And now I've taught, now I've learned that, oh, I can do this. I can shoot someone. Okay. Even if I've never heard before.
Sunday, snowy parking lot, hole shot. Dad's car. First time you got the 504 barrel and you do a complete loop with it and everything's wonderful. Then you go get all your friends and you do it again.
Yeah.
And you get all your friends and on top of those friends, and they're standing and watching and cheering. And now all of a sudden the only light pole in the entire parking lot becomes part of your grill. You just don't think that those things are going to happen because you can't anticipate likely spirals in the moment. So you have to create these likelihoods that are going to occur and do this cost benefit analysis. And you got to be able to do it faster than the situation arises. So if you don't conduct a brief cost benefit analysis when you're doing that, you know, it's the same. People overeat, Brian, and then they go, oh my God, look, I've gotten fat overnight. And now I've got diabetes and I can't do anything about it. This shit didn't happen overnight. It happened over a protracted period of time. We're talking about people with impulse control, that their impulse control and self-control is so poor that it tends to become violent. But a situation doesn't have to be violent. Happy head can be those kids in that car spinning a hole shot, doing a lawn job. That was a popular thing in Detroit when I was a kid. And then
drive
all of a sudden,
someone's lawn, or
you got it, you lose control,
and then you're in the house. You're parked in the living room. No,
and
that's
so the happy head. The key to the happy head is knowing that there is such a thing called the happy head. Because if I can name it, I can avoid it.
No, and that's a good point, because I've heard other discussions of similar type topics, and it goes down the rabbit hole of, you know, you start talking about impulse control and they go, well, yeah, that's the issue. And then, you know, because men have more testosterone, they're more likely to do it. And it's like, that's all great, but that doesn't matter. Meaning I can't use that information. That doesn't change anything.
We don't
it's
walk like, down a tree. Great, he's a man. And everybody great, jumps you, and you, hides you, behind
you,
the hedges.
Well, that, you know? And you've now described the incident in even far more detail. Like, good job. What does that mean going forward? It's the so what.
And how do you play the so what?
Yeah, how do you play the so what? And that's the idea of understanding what the happy head concept is and how to avoid it through a little bit of critical thinking, right? Is this the right thing? Or you call it the cost-benefit analysis.
Yeah.
But identifying that person who's got it. And that comes into, they're in, it's almost, we use the groove in a record, right? Analogy, yep. Which for anyone
nobody
listening,
nobody knows. What you keep a reminding record me, is. Nobody's old enough to remember that.
But the idea is there's one groove in the record, right? And it there continues is. To play and continues to go. And that's like seeing someone with the happy head, right? They're in that groove, they're in that moment. And it's like, oh, this is going to continue or possibly escalate, but at least at a minimum continue, because I'm exhibiting, or I'm observing someone who's exhibiting no critical thinking skills whatsoever. And I think to pick up on that is that's the pocket lint we're talking about, to go and, oh man, they are just at bang thinking right now. They're just literally walking through their environment, reacting to everything around them. So therefore you can now predict what the likely outcomes are. If you can just look down the street a little farther and see what's coming next at them.
That's it. If we have a bowl of prophylactics on the left, and if we have a bowl of alcohol and ice, I know you have no idea what that is. And if we have a bowl of ice with drinks on the right, if condoms are present, people that are enjoying each other are more likely to use them because they're present, they're visible. If you add to that a modicum of education and perhaps a warning before you go out, hey, before you hump, cover your stump. When you're boying and boying, or girling and boying, or any group of whatever, and that crocodile from the door, yeah. Whatever the hell you're up to, you're likely to use that protection, okay? If the alcohol is in the room, you're just as equally likely to use that alcohol. And the next thing you know, you're, you know, window paint and blotter acid and speedball and heroin.
It's
now you've got 9
slippery
kids,
slope. Yeah.
Asia merge range. And I'm totally serious about that.
No,
your child mind isn't very smart when it comes to stacking the deck and saying these things are likely to come from my one night of passion. And guess what? When you're hugging and kissing, all of a sudden, all of those chemicals are in play, Brian, and you add a little bit of alcohol to that and a little bit of, you know, sexy music. The next thing you know, clothes are coming off and we're not thinking of putting anything on. If we address that in our training, then it's likely that we'll think and stop and give ourselves a time of distance and say, hey, we better do one of these precautionary methods. So why is it different than when we're throwing a kid the keys to the car? Why is it different when we're taking our kid out to the range and teaching them about weapon safety, for example? All of those things go hand in hand with a trainer, with a mentor, with a coach, with a parent. We are less likely to fall into those traps unless there's mental illness aboard. And sometimes mental health does play into a person. I'll give you an example. The Gabby Giffords.
Yes.
I think that was also Arizona.
It was also Arizona. Yeah. And I wonder if that's why you made
that
connection.
Holy crap, let's stay the hell out of Arizona this week.
Yeah.
Obviously, I can't think of his name right now, but I see the kid.
Yeah, I know that.
Throwing a bag of stuff. That wasn't a political statement he was making.
No.
He was a grenade that was ready to explode. And guess what? There was a mall. He could hear the people yelling on loudspeakers at the mall and drove over there and said, I'm going to shoot it up. So don't look for motive in these. Look for method. If you understand what's playing out ahead of you and you're seeing now that the anger is turned into action, that's where your focus should go. That's where your resources should go, so you don't commit too soon.
No, and again, you brought up the point of there can also be mental health issues or other things on board. So we're not trying to oversimplify the issue. We're actually just trying to make it easier to identify, right? Okay. I don't have to understand about psychopathy or mental health or schizophrenia, or I don't need to learn to identify all that stuff. If I learn to understand when someone's in, oh man, they got the happy head right now, that allows me to go, this situation is continuing, or this is going to get worse, or they're not recognizing what's going on.
Or they're coming down. That might be enough. That might be enough to save a life, Brian.
No, that's the idea is just observing that you can then formulate a plan from that, or plan of action or intervention if it's your job, but at least identifying when someone else is, or when you are, or and the best is, you know, same thing with, like, you brought up the kids example, when you see them like, okay, stop right now. I see what you're doing. It's fun. I'm not going to ruin your parade here, but let's put a couple of these measures in place so that you don't. It was the same thing.
You
like,
got it.
I knew Harper was going to jump off of these stairs onto her bed. It's got a little like spiral staircase that comes up to the loft. I knew it was going to happen. She's going to do it. So it's like, okay, here's how to do that. I'm going to show you how to do that so that you maintain 3 points of contact, turn and face where you're going. Like, look at this. So I
play the bounce, right? Sharp objects where you're, you know, inertia,
turned it,
force.
Turned it into a learning, you know, moment, a teachable moment. So now she was okay. And then went through the critical thing of, okay, if you land right here, what do you think is going to happen? Oh man, that would hurt. Or alpha. What if you bounce here? Just play the what if game. So now I know she's going to do it. So now she's doing it safely. Right.
Yeah, and then it also kind of took that. It took the fun out of it. Mom and dad aren't home and you're injured. What would you do next? And Brian, what you're doing is you're creating explanatory storylines for events that haven't yet happened. And that's what takes us from the realm of in the moment at bang and incorporates the left of bang, the at bang, the right of bang, near right of bang. You go and creates a 360 approach to your personal safety.
No. And I think that's a good way to kind of describe it, especially when you got the kids involved, but we all fall victim to that. I don't care what it is. So, I think that's kind of a good spot to bring it in for a landing on, Greg, unless there was something else you wanted to add about the happy head.
Nope. I coined that phrase because I've got a giant happy head and I'm the dancing bear. I'm an idiot when it comes to that. Brian, you know that. I will be the one at the end of the party that breaks the leg and everybody says you should have known better.
Yeah.
No, be safe out there.
No.
And we both know that. The training is going to change it.
Yeah, and that's a good point, is we're bringing up all these examples because I continue to fall into them. I fall into the trap all the time.
We've learned nothing, folks.
And I'm good at articulating it because I have so many examples of when I've been a jackass, right? No, but that's the point
of why we do it, Maren. That's called an excuse, folks.
So, all right. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. Don't forget, follow us on social media, please. Share with your friends if you enjoyed it. Send them a link to the podcast and we can get it out to more people. So thanks everyone for tuning in. And don't forget that training changes behavior. Thanks for tuning in, folks. If you would like some more information about what we talked about today, you can head to the Left of Greg Patreon site, where we've added some more information about what we discussed, as well as some examples of how you can practically apply some of the lessons learned. Please remember to tell your friends about the show and follow us on Facebook at HBPRA. Thanks again and be safe.